LSU SpursCast, episode 599. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on the SpursCast. Today, I'll be joined by Project Spurs writer Colin Reed. In this episode, Colin and I will discuss the Spurs in the last two games, the team facing COVID-19 difficulties, DeMar DeRozan's All-Star chances, and we'll shine the spotlight on Derek White's return. Before we begin, though, we do want to express our thoughts and prayers to all Texans suffering right now through this winter storm. We also hope that you all are taking care out there. We know it's been tough for a lot of people here in San Antonio, but then also in Texas as a whole state, with this winter storm that has come by. And then also some unfortunate news on Friday, DeMar DeRozan, he announced that his father had passed away. So we do send our thoughts and prayers out to him and his family. And, it's even more tough for DeRozan for the fact that the Spurs are actually in quarantine in Charlotte right now. So, he's having to suffer through a loss of a family member while being away from his own family and stuck in a hotel room most likely in Charlotte. So it is welcome, Colin. It is some unfortunate times right now for a lot of people. So how have you been holding up during this winter storm that we're facing here in Texas?
I'm doing pretty well myself. Honestly, we had it pretty good here. We had some power outages, but nothing too crazy. So honestly, not as bad as what a lot of people have had. I think the mental toll of this week, which I think a lot of people have been dealing with, has been pretty hard. So I'm happy it's Friday. I was really happy to see the sun was out all of today. That was a great feeling.
Yeah, no, it's the same here. Where I live specifically, I'm in San Antonio as well, but my part of the city didn't get affected as much. We just had a minor power outage, and we've been lucky to have, water. I mean, obviously we're in the boil notice right now. But aside from that, we've been very fortunate. Unfortunately, I have had some family and friends, dealing with some tough times right now. So it is a little bit tough for a lot of people. We hope that everyone out there listening is getting stronger and getting through this unfortunate time. All right, so let's go ahead and dive right into this episode. So there hasn't been too much news in terms of the Spurs, because we know about what their situation is with their season suspended for a bit here in the schedule. So let's go ahead and dig right into where the team left off before this pause in the season for them due to the COVID-19 difficulties that they're facing. So since I last recorded, they went 2-0 in their last two games. So we go back to last Friday. They got a really impressive win against the Atlanta Hawks to start off their rodeo road trip. They led by as many as 42 points, just dominated the Hawks. And in the fourth quarter, the bench unit did not the main bench unit, but like the third tier bench unit, they kind of lost that lead. They kind of got outscored by the Hawks there, and so the Spurs ended up winning by 11 points, but it was still a comfortable win for San Antonio. Then on Sunday, the Spurs traveled to Charlotte for their second game, and this is one of those games where they actually made a comeback. They faced a 16-point deficit, and it was the second time this season where they were able to come back, and they got a 12-point win against the Hornets on Sunday. So overall, big picture, they're 16-11 where they sit in the standings as of the pause of the season for them, which is sixth out west. That you and I recorded this on a Friday evening, and then they are 21st on offense and 8th on defense. So I guess let's just first talk about where they left off. What do you think about this team right now, Colin, where they stand?
Yeah, it really seems like they have some things coming together, I think, especially with Derek White's return, and now that he's kind of finding a rhythm again. 8th on defense is pretty surprising, especially after what we've seen from them the past couple years, but it does feel like that 21st on offense can go up if some other players just start making shots. Both of those first two games of the rodeo road trip, I think that people, if they just look at, especially Spurs fans, if they just look at the schedule, they might be like, oh, these are games we'd expect the Spurs to win. But both of these teams are actually very potent this year, and both of them, the Hawks and the Hornets, and both of those were very losable games, honestly, in terms of just the opponents that they're playing. And on any given night, you have a player like Trae Young who can obviously go off, or the way that the Hornets have been playing lately. So both of those, like you said, are honestly very impressive wins and good starts to the rodeo road trip. And I think, if they can continue to keep their defense around that same level, they actually have some upside on offense. And so they're a team that is coming together. I'm not sure if this type of record will project out exactly throughout the rest of the season, but I think that they will always be in contention for, one of those bottom playoff spots or a play-in spot for the rest of the year. And I think they've kind of solidified themselves as that kind of team.
Yeah, I agree with you, you know, 100% there. And I think the biggest reason for that is the fact that if they can have a stable, you know, consistent top 10 defense, that's going to always help you win ball games and keep you within a playoff picture. So I really feel that whether their offense does get better, which I agree with you, I think that it will start to get a little bit better as the games progress later on in the year. That could help them even more. But if not, I think just having a top 10 defense again, as long as they stick to those principles that are keeping them in the top 10 right now, I think that they're going to continue to just keep some separation from those teams, you know, at the bottom of the West, to where they can either be in that, you know, that 3 through 6 range, or you know, in the 7 through 10 range, which is enough to qualify you for that play-in tournament, like you mentioned there, Colin. All right, so now SpursCast listeners, as you all know, you know, the Spurs have been facing some COVID difficulties, and so we're going to kind of take you through a timeline of why there's no basketball right now for the Spurs. So we go back to Sunday. You know, one player, Quindary Weatherspoon, after the game against the Hawks on Friday, the Spurs announced that Quindary Weatherspoon would be out against the Hornets on Sunday due to health and safety protocols. So then on Monday, you know, after that Sunday game, the NBA announces that the Spurs versus Pistons game was going to be postponed due to health and safety protocols, and they said because due to a positive result within the Spurs. So they didn't say if it was a player or, you know, staff member. They just said someone within the Spurs, you know, there's a positive test result. Well, then on Tuesday, we get word that the next three Spurs games would be postponed as well. So that's against the Cavaliers, against the Knicks, and then against the Pacers. And now this time, the NBA did clarify and actually say due to 4 Spurs players testing positive and additional contact tracing. And not only the Spurs, also they're also doing some contact tracing on the Charlotte Hornets players who the Spurs last played in their last game. So what does that mean? The Spurs have basically been quarantined in Charlotte since last Friday. So you know, you and I recorded this on a Friday, Colin. So it's basically been a week now. And you know, I don't know if I forgot what the NBA rules, whether it's 7 or 10 days, but you know, they'll basically get to that mark here pretty soon in a few more days. So right now, as of where things stand, on Wednesday this coming week is when the Spurs should be able to return to the court, and that's going to be in Oklahoma against the Thunder, Oklahoma City. Again, that's on Wednesday. That's when they're expected to resume. We haven't got word yet from the NBA, just 100% if that's going to for sure happen. But, you know, as far as quarantining, both the players should have already had their time, though, you know, being in a quarantine setting. So it looks like all roads indicate to them picking up and playing basketball again on Wednesday. And so I guess some of the, you know, these are not really, there's not no definitive answer here, but these are some questions you have to ponder now, Colin, with the team facing this COVID difficulties, especially considering that they were playing really well, like we just mentioned, you know, 2-0 to start off the rodeo road trip, 6th out west. And the questions are, you know, how rusty are they going to be after being away from basketball for over a week? And then the second question is, you know, they haven't, even though I mentioned Quindary Weatherspoon as a player who was out for COVID protocols, they didn't actually say that he's positive. The NBA has not identified, and they won't identify exactly who was positive. So all we know is that there are 4 players. We don't know if those players are the players, you know, at the end of the bench, are they the players who are always getting minutes, you know, as far as the core 9? So that's another question is, you know, how much will this affect those players as they get back onto the court? So what do you think about these two questions, Colin?
Yeah, so I think that the rust question definitely maybe follows the who were the players that tested positive question, because I think, you know, with everything that we've seen with players that have tested positive for COVID, it seems like if a player tests positive for COVID and is asymptomatic, they can return to a fairly high level in a decently quick amount of time. I think that, you know, just being quarantined for a while definitely kind of hurts someone's physical conditioning, and that takes a little while to come back from. But they can kind of get back into game shape fairly quickly. What we have seen on the other side of that is that players that have been symptomatic, and you know, I don't know the level of symptomatic, you know, there's probably a big range here, but players who have had physical symptoms, even if they aren't the severe case and they're kind of in the mild case, they take quite a bit longer to come back. And I think we saw that from a lot of players, especially in the bubble, when, you know, we are expecting strong playoff performance from certain players, and they really didn't perform. And those just also happen to be players who are symptomatic even quite a while before the bubble. And we see that. I know Seth Curry talked about how it's been a struggle for him to return. So I really think that their performance after this really depends on who had COVID and if they were symptomatic or not, and kind of how bad was their situation. But I think the rust question, I think that it's natural that if they are off for a week and a half that they will be a little bit rusty. But I think that that kind of thing generally shakes off about after a quarter or after a half of basketball. I don't think that that's something that will linger for several games. And obviously, you know, if you're playing below your normal level for a quarter or a half, that can lose you a game. But I think that that's one of those things that generally will correct itself pretty quickly. But if, you know, if these are four of the high-end players of the core nine, then I think that could really affect their season in terms of if some of these players who have been giving them really high consistent play start faltering, understandably because of this, now all of a sudden they're kind of in danger of falling off of what's making them play so well so far this season.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100% on everything you said there about the players, you know, returning and how it may impact them, especially if they were symptomatic during this time frame. And then also, I think that it would take about, you know, two or three games before all the players get back in routine and get their motions, you know, their legs under them, those players that weren't affected by COVID, should we say. And so the thing to keep an eye on is that right now, you know, when they do return against the Thunder on Wednesday, there's only going to be five games left in the first half of the season. And then I believe as of March 4th, they go to All-Star break after that date. So again, there's limited games left, five games left when they do come back. And you know, we have seen that the NBA has kind of like quickly, if two teams, you know, earlier in the year had their games postponed, and then their opponent currently has a game postponed, like we saw with the, I think it was the Pistons, where they basically scheduled a game out of nowhere, but it was almost like a makeup game. So there's that situation as well. Maybe you know, if some team that the Spurs had to cancel on during this had to postpone on, maybe the NBA throws an extra game at them before even the second half of the season starts. So that's again something to watch. And obviously we know that, you know, right now the NBA is still developing that second half of the season schedule, and so that would obviously include these now total five games. Again, this has been five total games when we go back to that January game where the Spurs had a game postponed as well earlier in the year against, I believe it was the Pelicans. So again, you know, this is some things to watch as the Spurs, you know, eventually do come back. We're assuming again on Wednesday, you know, assuming that everyone's now negative and they got through their testing and everything like that. All right, so let's move on to our second topic here, and this is DeMar DeRozan's really strong chance, in my opinion, of making the All-Star reserve team out West. So we know that the All-Star starters were announced on Thursday. And the front court players for the West were LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, and Kawhi Leonard. And then for the guard rotation, it's Luka Doncic and Steph Curry. So again, those are your five players who are going to be the starters. So that leaves the reserve candidates. So the reserves will be announced on Tuesday, February 23rd. And the way this works is the NBA head coaches, all 30 of them, will actually pick the reserve players, and they must choose three front court and two guard players. From there, they're going to have about two wild card spots to choose any position. It doesn't have to be a guard. I mean, it doesn't have to be specifically guard or front court. It could be either spot for those last two positions. So one guard who I really feel like is a lock, you know, from both listening to different NBA analysts, but then also looking at how the voting came in from the media, the players, and the fans for the All-Star starters, I really feel Damian Lillard's like that one lock on the Western Conference guard rotation. You know, he's got the Blazers fourth out West, 29.8 points, 4.4 rebounds, 7.7 assists. When he's on the floor, the Blazers are a plus 14.6 points per 100, according to Cleaning the Glass. So what does that mean? Let's just say Dame's a lock. Well, then that leaves three open guard spots. I'm assuming that's only if the West coaches give those last two wild card spots to guards. So again, I'm assuming three open guard spots, and then maybe one extra spot if, you know, we know that Anthony Davis is injured for multiple weeks. So if Adam Silver chooses a guard as his replacement, well, then that could be an extra guard spot. So basically like a fourth guard spot. But again, we don't know if Silver might choose a front court player instead to replace Davis, who's injured. So that leaves the candidates out for those guard spots. And that leaves, you know, I think eight players. So let's talk first about the candidates in the playoff picture. So we're going to obviously talk about DeMar DeRozan because he's on the Spurs. So he has the Spurs, DeMar, at six in the Western Conference. He's averaging 19.8 points, 5 rebounds, 6.9 assists. One thing that does hurt his case, and I heard Zach Lowe and Kevin Arnovitz talk about this on a podcast, is that, you know, because he spent a lot of his early season time with LaMarcus Aldridge on the floor, his net rating is not very good. It's a minus 10.1 according to Cleaning the Glass, and that's the biggest out of all these players considered for All-Stars. But, you know, when Aldridge isn't there, and now that DeRozan's been, you know, starting alongside Derek White and DeJounte, his numbers have looked better, his on-off numbers. He's in a competition basically amongst Devin Booker, Chris Paul, Mike Conley, and Donovan Mitchell. Then the candidates not in the playoff picture are, you know, those players, like the younger players like John Morant, De'Aaron Fox, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So I guess my question to you, Colin, is who do you think, let's just say that the coaches are going to give three of those open spots to guards. Who do you think those players are, in your opinion, out of these eight that I have listed here?
Okay, so I think that one of the Jazz guards definitely makes it. So I think that the Jazz probably get Gobert plus one of the guards.
Okay.
And I feel like, just from perception, Mitchell is the one that people would pick. But my thing, and having I know the Hollinger and Duncan show, they were talking about this. I am a huge Mike Conley fan, and I would love it if he could make an All-Star game, and this is probably his last great shot at that. So I feel like it'll probably be Donovan Mitchell for one of the slots, but I would love it if Mike Conley was one of them. And the Suns probably only get one as well. Mm-hmm. So in terms of which one of those two get it, oh, that's a good question. I think that there is this perception that Devin Booker's kind of had a down year, and that Chris Paul has really come in and like made them a winning team all of a sudden. So I think that even though the stats might be better for Booker, I think that Chris Paul gets another one. So you have Paul and Mitchell. And then the last one is a little bit tough. Another thing to consider is that it is coaches. So I think that the net rating actually won't be a huge deal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think the coaches are going to go like, oh, well, he has a negative 10 net rating. And looking at, you know, if we do assume that the Jazz and the Suns only get one guard each, looking at the remaining four guards, if three guards are picked out of this, of DeRozan, Morant, Fox, and Gilgeous-Alexander, I really do think that the coaches are likely to pick DeRozan. He's on a winning team and he's just kind of an established player. And he's kind of, you know, the fact that his game is a little bit old school, I don't think is a problem for a lot of these coaches that might be voting, especially because I think they're spending more time on their own teams than they are on, you know, seeing, oh, is Ja Morant a worthy All-Star, you know? So they just look at the stats and they say, oh, I know who DeMar DeRozan is. I know what his game is. You know, I'm going to put him in the All-Star game. So I'm going to say, out of this list, if three guards were to make it, it would be Donovan Mitchell, Chris Paul, and DeMar DeRozan.
Okay. So I'm actually just right with you. I just have a little change in terms of the players. So I actually felt that Mitchell was like a lock just because, you know, the Jazz are number one. And then I thought Gobert as well. But then after listening to, like I mentioned, like that Zach Lowe and Kevin Arnovitz episode, they kind of made me think about Mike Conley. And then I saw, you know, his advanced metrics are really good. But again, like you said, you know, coaches really aren't going to look at a lot of those advanced metric kind of stuff, on off numbers, things like that. So my three picks are that I think that they'll choose again. This is, you have to keep in mind, these are the coaches choosing, not like the media or not the fans or anybody like that. So I agree with you. I think it's Donovan Mitchell is the one player for Utah. I think for the Suns, I think that you know, I could see either Booker or Paul Guinea, but I think they'll choose Booker just because, again, he's the primary guy that Phoenix runs through, you know, each night. And then the third player, because, you know, I think that coaches like to reward winning, I think that they're going to choose DeMar DeRozan. I don't think that, for one, their age, Ja Morant, De'Aaron Fox, and SGA, you know, they're always going to have multiple opportunities as long as they stay healthy in their careers to get into the All-Star game. So I really feel like they're going to kind of be against them in a way, that the fact that they're not a playoff team, but then also that they're going to have multiple chances in the future to make All-Star teams. So I think that out of the rest of those players, I really feel like DeRozan's going to be that player. So I you know, you and I both agree that we think that DeRozan has a really good shot here of being a Western Conference reserve. And again, it's because, you know, the fact that like Conley and Mitchell are almost going against each other in a way, and then also Booker and Paul. And it's not like the Spurs are that far off from those teams. You know, obviously Utah's really good, but they also have Gobert you have to consider. So maybe even three All-Stars. And then you know, the Suns are just one, you know, just in terms of the ranking, in terms of standing, should I say, they're just you know, fifth, and the Spurs are sixth. So, you know, DeRozan by, basically, when you look at this, looks like DeRozan by himself versus Phoenix, who has two players that they rely on each night in terms of being their focal go-to player. So and then, you know, the stats aren't too far off. I see that like Booker here is like the leading scorer out of this group with 24 points, whereas everyone else, you know, is kind of right there, just a few, you know, within 5 points of Booker of these stats. So I think that you and I both agree that we think that DeRozan has a really good chance of going back to the All-Star game next week. So again, keep an eye, Spurs cast listeners, on February 23rd. That is a Tuesday, and that's when the Western Conference reserves will be announced. And again, also, there's also that wild card that Adam Silver might put another guard in there. And we also have to consider that what if the coaches don't put those guards as those extra two spots? Well, then that gets even tougher for DeRozan if that's the case, because then they could end up putting front court players. But I think that it's going to come down to guards, because that's where a lot of the issues happening with in terms of getting enough guards into this All-Star game that have had a really good season. All right, let's move into our last topic, Colin. This is just kind of shining the spotlight this week on Derek White. You know, I do want to kind of to note that it's only been 8 total games that he's been back. So, you know, we have to keep in mind a small sample size, you know, even though it seems like he's been back a little bit longer than that. It's only been 8 games. So let's first discuss his base stats. You know, 11.8 points in his return, 34% from three on 5.5 attempts per game, which is second on the team behind, I believe, only Patty Mills in terms of attempts per game. 1.9 free throw attempts, 1.8 rebounds, 3.9 assists, which is third on the team. one steal a game, which is third on the team, one block a game, which is third on the team, in 23.6 minutes through eight games, like I mentioned. And the reason why I really want to talk about Derek White is because he just had one of his season-high scoring games just most recently against Charlotte with 25 points. When he's on the floor, the Spurs are a plus 11.2 points per 100, 88th percentile, again, when he's on the floor, according to Cleaning the Glass. So let's first talk about his defense. You know, the team is looking really good with Derek on the floor. They're holding opponents to 1.3 points per 100 less when he's on the floor, which is in the 60th percentile, according to Cleaning the Glass. He's in the 99th percentile amongst wings in block percentage, 85th percentile in steal percentage amongst wings. He has 4.4 deflections per 36 minutes, which would lead the team if he played 36 minutes a night. He's got 10.9 contested shots per 36 minutes, which is only behind, in terms of rotation players on the Spurs, Jakob Poeltl and LaMarcus Aldridge. And then you're starting to see that chemistry between him and DeJounte Murray now that they're starting together, where if you look at the primary matchups in those two recent games against the Hawks, you saw that Derek and DeJounte spent pretty much all their time guarding either Trae Young or Kevin Huerter, which is that tells you that they're communicating off ball in terms of switching or, you know, picking up the next man who's open in terms of when a possession ends. And then also against the Hornets, they both defended LaMelo Ball and Terry Rozier as their main matchup. So again, it shows you again that they're starting to communicate a lot more in terms of switching or again, just picking up that next guard. So what do you want to say, Colin, about Derek's defense?
Yeah, I think that it gives the Spurs so much flexibility in the backcourt. You know, they really now have like two A-plus defenders in terms of players who can guard. Like you're talking about like a Trae Young, a LaMelo Ball, and like both of these offenses had been fairly potent recently. So just being able to have players who have the length and the athleticism to guard these high skill guards just makes such a big difference today. And not only that, but when you have a player like DeRozan who is so skilled on offense but has maybe more difficulties on the defensive end, when you have this kind of backcourt, now you're in a position where it gets easier to hide him on maybe the worst offensive perimeter player. And you can kind of do that 1 through 4 with the way that the NBA plays now. So just having Derek White back for the Spurs has a cascading effect on their defense when you have such a strong defender back in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I agree with you. And another thing to watch is, you know, I wrote about this. Actually, I wasn't right about it, but then, you know, it wasn't enough sample size. I think it was like 4 or 5 games. But if you start looking at some of the opponent 3-point numbers, their percentage of shots that are wide open have gone down in the last 4 or 5 games. And also, you know, just their accuracy has gone down as well. And again, yeah, I want to wait till there's more data to prove that, you know, Derek is making a difference there. But I think you can kind of see it in terms of when you see that they're limiting the amount of open threes that they're giving up. I think that's a pretty good indicator. But again, we want to see what it looks like when you get like 10 to 15 games of having Derek and DeJounte starting to really prove that. So you know, you do see those early benefits of having Derek back on defense as well, as along with everything that you said there. Now let's talk about him in the return on offense. You know, the Spurs are really good on offense when he's back on the floor. They are outscoring teams by 9.8 points per 100 according to Cleaning the Glass, which is in the 94th percentile. His shot profile, 51% of his shots right now are coming from three. His second shot to go to is the restricted area, which is that area closest to the basket. 23% of his shots come from there. He doesn't spend too much time taking those little floaters in the non-restricted area, only 16% of his shots there. And he doesn't really spend a lot of time in the mid-range, 9% of his shots there. One thing that he brings to the Spurs that he did last year, he did this as well, is he gives the Spurs a second player who likes to launch those pull-up threes. He's very confident in that shot. 25% of his threes are pull-up threes, which is second only behind Patty Mills. And right now he's making 36% of those pull-up threes. 55% of his shots have been wide open so far to start this year. He's making 38% of those shots. Like I mentioned, he is attacking the rim. That's his second go-to shot, getting closest to the basket. So he's finishing with 60% accuracy in the restricted area. He's in the 95th percentile in assist percentage amongst wings, and also the 91st percentile in turnover percentage. So again, he's taking care of the ball. He's moving it. He's really setting up his teammates, is what we see here in that data. And then lastly, he's he's now fourth in drives per game on the Spurs with 7.5 attempts per game in terms of drives. And what happens when he drives the ball? There's a 43% chance he's going to put up up a shot, there's a 43% chance he's going to pass to a teammate. Then there's also a 10% chance he gets the free throw line, and just a 6.7% chance that he turns it over. So again, we see a player who's going to get to the free throw line a little bit more, attack a little bit more, who's not going to be a turnover. He's going to have any turnover issues for this team. So what do you want to say about Derek's offense?
Yeah, so I feel like I've said it maybe even a million times on this podcast and other episodes, but like the one word that really comes to mind for me for his offense that really has maybe since I think it was his second year, 2 years ago, two seasons ago, when he really started to develop into the player that he is now, is just steady. Like, he's a very steady player. Mm-hmm. He makes the right decisions. He makes everyone around him steady too. He just has this like, and like, he's not like lackadaisical or anything, but he just has this sense about him that when he's running the offense, everything kind of calms down, and everyone else is making good decisions, and he's going to make the right play, and everyone else is going to make the right play now. And it's just this kind of like way that he holds himself in, this way that he plays. And you see it with his shot distribution, you see it with his assist to turnover percentages. You know, the Spurs have so many perimeter guys who can drive to the hoop, and he's another one, but he's maybe even more successful in terms of shooting when he gets to the restricted area than some of the other guys. He just has a lot of these tools on offense that exactly is what you'd want in a guard in today's NBA, and he just knows how to kind of calm everything down and bring the offense to a place where it can really succeed, especially with a lot of these younger players who can, I think, sometimes get really wrapped up in the excitement and just go, go, go. He kind of can bring that to the right place.
Yeah, and this is a little bit off topic, but this is something that I addressed last week in the Spurs cast, and we've actually seen some progress. And this is in terms of Keldon Johnson's aggressiveness, because last week what I discussed with Josh Paredes was that Keldon's attacking numbers in terms of getting in the paint, driving, getting to the free throw line, those kind of things, we've seen a decrease in that because when Derek came back, because there's another ball handler, a dominant ball handler on the team with Derek back. And so it really felt that Keldon kind of couldn't find his way of when exactly to be as aggressive as he had been. However, in these last two games against the Hornets and the Hawks, you have seen Keldon put up, I think, 20 points in one game and over 10 points in each. The main thing is that he scored over 10 points in the paint in both of those games against the Hornets and the Hawks. And so you see that him starting next to Derek now, I think that also that's kind of been a learning curve for the both of them of learning. Keldon's learning now how to still be as aggressive as well, and picking his spots of when to attack now with another player who has the ball in his hands a lot in Derek. Have you seen anything there? Any progression?
Yeah, and I know that it had been kind of a new thing because, Keldon really emerged as a starter this season. I mean, I know his bubble performance was at that level last year. Derek White thing was something that everyone wanted all of last season. We finally got more of it in the bubble. So there's a lot of adjustments, I think, that have to be made. I think that a lot of the times people see a list of players and they think, oh, okay, these players are good, so they'll play good together. And I think that sometimes it takes a little bit longer for these types of lineups to gel, especially with how much Derek White was out to start the season. So I think that you are starting to see these lineups gel, and you think of the starters and some of the players that the Spurs have in their rotation, and like I was saying, their ability to be aggressive and to drive, and they're putting a lot of pressure on the rim against opponents. But then when you have a player who is pulling up at the rate that White is, you also have a player who's putting pressure on the defense from the perimeter too. So now all of a sudden you're starting to put a lot more pressure on opponents. And when Keldon is now learning his spots to be aggressive, but as he's learning those spots, because there's another player on the court who's a threat from three and who's also a threat to drive when he has the ball, he'll find it, I think, easier to make those scoring opportunities when he's able to find those opportunities, as much as it's just a matter of finding the right time to be aggressive.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And just, again, it is only 8 games, and really it's 7 games because, you know, that first game that Derek played was early in January, then he got hurt again. So it's really the last 7 games that he's been playing like this. And he also, Coach Pop also said that he wasn't going to be playing on the second night of back-to-back, so that's also something to keep in mind, was that he did rest a game. And again, it's early season data, but a lot of these trends are things that, like Colin mentioned, these are things we've seen from the past 2 years of Derek, you know, his shot profile, his steadiness, you know, in the offense in terms of being a player who can run pick and roll, get to the free throw line, you know, set up teammates. So these are things that we see already in the data that's trending toward what kind of player Derek's going to be again this year. And again, the numbers may be a little bit more, you know, more productive for him right now, but they may, you know, fall down just a little bit in certain categories. So again, it just shows though that Derek's getting back into how he plays, and also it's going to benefit his team because they're obviously, you know, we've seen them have some pretty big leads here these last few games. So before we close out this episode, we do want to remind you all to visit projectspurs.com. You know, when the games start up again, Steven Anderson will continue to have analysis after each game. Benjamin Bornstein's getting prepared for the draft by writing his prospect watches. His latest one is over Franz Wagner by Ben. Also, we have the Forever Toros podcast going, you know, during the G League bubble. So Mike DeLeon, Michael DeLeon, John Diaz, and Jonas Clark are continuing to put out episodes each week. And their latest episode is episode 8. Again, if you want to follow the Austin Spurs and how they're doing. And then also, I've been writing, you know, whenever the games are happening, a piece called The Day Off, should I say. So the latest one is called The Day Off after the win over the Hornets. And it's on Keldon Johnson and DeJounte Murray's ability to attack the rim, something Colin mentioned there earlier. The steals and deflection numbers that Derek's, adding with Devin Vassell and DeJounte Murray. And then also, you know, there's just more data and stuff like that in this piece that I wrote about DeRozan's all-star chances. So thanks again to Colin for joining me here on the Spurs Cast, and also to Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.